was grasped by Caesar at behest of Rome, and so the earthly realms were brought in line with heaven. Where the wild Gauls had their home across the mountains, where the rivers run in all the valleys of the Rhone from Var to Rhine, the fighting tribes bowed every one, and then the banner, having come so far, turned back with him across the Rubicon, a flight beyond what tongue or pen can tell. And then it went to where Pompey had moved on. To Spain it wheeled the host, and then as well Durazzo and Pharsalia. Pompey gone to Egypt, his last grief came to a head. The head was his. Caesar, not knowing this, continued his pursuit, and so was led to where Troy once had been. Nor did he miss the sight of Hector's tomb. And then he came to Egypt, whereupon the banner shook with rage at Ptolemy, then fell in flame on Mauritania, where Caesar took the throne of Juba. Once more westward then the banner flew to Spain, where Caesar stilled the trumpets of the last of Pompey's men. It dipped in Rome when Caesar's blood was spilled. With his successor the flag flew again, and that inheritor, ensured by deed, Brutus and Cassius would howl in hell, and Cleopatra too, that broken reed, still weeps. She fled before the flag as well, and from the viper took with dreadful speed her death. On with Augustus, the flag's flight reached the Red Sea. With him it gave the world such peace the shrine of Janus was locked tight, while that great hand held high the cloth unfurled. But everything the flag that moves my speech had done till that time and had yet to do, though all the mortal world its rule could reach, seems small and dim, and its achievements few, compared with what it did when held on high by the third Caesar. To Tiberius the glory went. When seen with a clear eye and right mind, this truth is revealed to us, of bringing fit revenge on Adam's sin by crucifying Christ. Pilate's assent to that death proved dignity was in the emperor's hand, and living justice meant the eagle. By this justice I, too, am inspired. Now be amazed at what I say. For next, with Titus, it ran on to damn and blast Jerusalem, all in the way of proper punishment for that first act of vengeance. After that, the Lombard tooth bit Holy Church. Charlemagne counter-attacked under the eagle's wings and fought for truth and saved her life. Now you can judge, in fact, those faction men that I before accused of their offences, cause of all your ills. For by the Guelphs the fleur-de-lis is used against the eagle flag, which yet fulfills the role of banner for the Ghibellines. By which group is the banner more abused? So let the latter faction, by all means, but with another flag, keep up their arts. For he who split the banner so it leans two ways, splays its intentions in two parts. Eternal justice and the shifting aims of politics. This new Charles of Anjou, the weak one, ought to moderate his claims and not imagine he can really do much to the talons that have dragged the skins off many bigger lions than him. The sons weep often, for the way of fault begins with their own fathers, and so folly runs in families. Let young Charles not think the Lord will change his eagle-bearing coat of arms for sprays of lilies, nor that a toy sword and putty shield will work like lucky charms. Now to your second question, I afford an answer. They adorned this little star, good spirits who did what they did to earn an honored form. And when it goes so far, the will for fame, that it can even turn honor to glory's ends, then it must mount more than the rays of true love, which lose force accordingly. But when we make the count of our reward and our desert, of course, part of our joy is in the way we find it neither less nor more. With even hand, the living justice sweetens to the mind his judgment, just because we understand that justice has been done, and true desire can never be warped to evil. Thus we see, as different voices join in the sweet choir, so different rankings make sweet harmony among these starry wheels. within this pearl there also shines the light of Romeo, who came to Provence as the merest churl to serve Count Raymond Berenger. And so successful was his management, his liege tripled in wealth, and saw four daughters wed, each as a queen. But envy soon laid siege to Romeo's position. Things were said by crafty tongues that flattered the count's ear, and foolishly he listened to their lies. He asked his faithful servant to appear with all the bills to judge with clouded eyes how every penny had been spent. The end had come for one who could have done no more to make his lord rich and thought him a friend. Thus from the court he came to, young and poor, the faithful Romeo left poor and old. And if you knew the mighty heart he had, begging his bread by scraps out in the cold, you'd think him something more than merely sad, and call his smug foes stupid to be glad. Canto 7. Hosanna, holy God of hosts, who makes yet more resplendent with his brightness all the happy fires that burn here for our sakes, lighting this realm in every hallowed hall. Singing these Latin-Hebrew notes, he spun, that spirit upon whom a double light of earth and heaven joined to flame as one. And I could see him sing, and heard the sight, as he and all the rest moved in the dance, and like the flight of quickest sparks were veiled by sudden distance. I could not advance without doubt, for inside myself I quailed, and told myself, "Tell her, for she knows how to slake my thirst with sweet drops." But that awe which at her name unmans me even now, so that mere fragments of it start a war in my soul, be, eat, at, ice, made me bow like one who falls asleep. She didn't leave me long like that, but shone a smile on me to make a man rejoice instead of grieve if he were in the fire. "You doubt, I see," she said. "Your show of silence can't deceive my judgment, which is not subject to fault. The question of Jerusalem has set you thinking how a vengeful armed assault upon just vengeance can itself have met standards of justice. Let me free your mind right now, and listen, for my words contain great doctrine. Adam never sought to find the limit to his will. It knew no rain, not even for his good. So never born he cursed himself and all his heritage. Always conceived in sin, mankind lay torn with sickness and in error from one age into the next, until God's word was pleased to come down and unite what had been split. Man's nature, that he'd made, and him. He seized the first, and to the second added it by one sole act of his eternal love, and all within himself. Now turn your sight on what must follow. Rescued from above, man's nature thus restored to share the light with what had made it, once more good and pure, by its own act was banned from paradise for having turned aside from the one sure way of the truth and its own life. The price was high. Compare with anguish of the cross with what the human-natured holy word betrayed, and it was just that painful loss. But neither was there ever wrong incurred to match the agony unleashed against the human that the nature rested in. From one act, diverse outcomes were dispensed. The same death worked two different ways to win pleasure for God and also for the Jews. The earth quaked and the sky gaped. No more, then, should it seem harsh to you to hear the views of those who think just vengeance was done when just vengeance was avenged in a high court. But now I see your mind is in a knot of tangled thought pulled tight through tangled thought it longs to be released from. You say, "What I hear, I follow. Why God willed this way to our redemption leaves me in the dark." Though this rule never sees the light of day in any one whose mind has missed the mark of growing as a flame to adulthood, yet since so many take aim with such zeal, and with so little sense, perhaps I should inform you why that way seemed the most real of all the ways that might lead men to good. Goodness divine, which spurns all envy hence, burning within, so sparkles, It displays all the eternal beauties. That intense ignition point sends out a further blaze without end, since its imprint, once embossed, does not grow pale. That which comes down like rain, free straight away, with not a droplet lost, nothing expended that it can't regain, pays no heed to the power of changing things. Conforming to that goodness, it is more delightful to it, since the light that rings the holy ardor puts its greatest store of brightness in what most resembles it. Of all these gifts to man, if even one is lacking in full force, then it is fit that he should fall from his place in the sun. Nothing but sin can disenfranchise him, and make him so unlike the good supreme that even lit by that light he stays dim and can't regain his place and thus redeem his dignity unless he fills the void made by his fault and pays the penalties fit for a pleasure sinfully enjoyed. Your nature forfeited these dignities when first it sinned, back there in the first man who bore the seed of sin, and you were torn from paradise, and not since time began could what you lost within you be reborn, except by crossing one of these two fords. God, in his clemency, is moved to spare the sinner, or the sinner's just rewards for folly are offset through what he gives by way of satisfaction. Fix your eyes within the unplumbed well where it most lives, the eternal counsel. Closely scrutinize my words. Within his limits man could not ever give satisfaction, for so low he could not humbly stoop, no matter what obedience he found it fit to show, as he had thought by disobedience to rise up, and this is the reason why man was debarred from any competence to render satisfaction and go high all by himself. And thus God was compelled, by his own ways, to give full life again to man through truth or mercy or the meld of both. But since to do good feels best when the doer does it most from his good heart, goodness divine, which shapes the world alone, was glad in raising you for a new start to use both ways. Nor was there ever known, nor will be, in between the first of days and last of nights, a process so sublime and glorious in either of those ways, justice and mercy, not in all of time. Giving himself so man, if he would rise again, could do so, God was bounteous beyond what he would now seem in our eyes if he had simply, and for his own use, granted a pardon. Other means fell short of justice. So the Son of God took on, in all humility, a form of flesh. But seeing all your doubts are not yet gone, one point I'll touch again and treat afresh, so you may see it clearly. You say, I see water, I see fire and air and earth, and all their blends grow old and putrefy, not lasting long, yet these things had their birth. Creation, unless you told me a lie, should have preserved them. Brother, here's what's true. The angels and this spotless country here, where you are now, you might say, came into existence wholly as they now appear, immediately entire. But those things you have named, the elements and mixtures made from them, all these receive their being from those powers which themselves are second grade, virtues created here in this kingdom. Their matter was created, and the power of all the stars that wheel around them. Each and every soul of animal and flower starts as a set of elements that reach a complex balance fit to be inspired by shining movement from the holy lights. But your soul's life is on the instant fired by one abrupt breath from the height of heights. The benefaction flows straight from its source in him, and so imbues the soul with love of him. It wants to join him with full force forever after, where he reigns above. And from all this, it follows that you can argue your case for resurrection. Just recall how flesh was first formed into man. For your first parents, too, rose from the dust at one breath. Bodily decay began only with sin. Immortal life you lost, but now you are redeemed. At what a cost! Canto 8. Venus of Cyprus, the world once believed, to its great peril, radiated love, mad love. In her third circle, as she weaved her wiles around this star, the center of her crazed affections. Ancient people thought, an ancient error, that not only she should have the honor of their full support through sacrifice and song, but Dione, her mother, and her little son Cupid, who lay, they said, in Dido's bosom, where he lit the fire for what that lady did to lure Aeneas and to keep him there. And from the goddess, with whom here I take my start, the star-map-makers took the name of Venus, she that finds two ways to make love to the sun, first with her morning flame, and then again at evening. I was not conscious of rising into it, but more that I was simply there, a sense I got further assurance of, now that I saw my lady grown more fair. And as within a flame we see sparks, and within a voice we hear another voice as both begin to interweave, each making its own choice, one holding close to the melodic line, while the other comes and goes to harmonize. So I saw lights within that light define their separate circles, each in separate guise of speed, some swift, some slow, thus to accord with their eternal vision, so I think. And never down from cold cloud winds have poured, seen or unseen, quicker than eyes can blink, as not to seem hamstrung to anyone who saw those lovely lights fly to our side, leaving the dance that they had first begun up there where the most powerful abide, the seraphim. And from those ranged in view before us came Hosanna, with a sound that ever since I've longed to hear anew. Then one drew near and said this, "You have found all of us ready at your pleasure. You may have your joy of us. We circle round in one orbit, with one thirst, at one pace, along with those high princes you addressed as you that move the third exalted place by understanding, and at your behest, and just to do you pleasure for your grace, a little quiet may be no less sweet, since we are all so very full of love." After my reverent eyes were raised to meet my ladies, and returned from there above with notice of approval, they again turned to that light which had pledged me so much, and I said, "Tell me who you are." And when I spoke, I showed how deep had been the touch of that sweet vow to answer me, and then I saw its size and incandescence grow, fueled by the new joy added to its joys. Thus changed, it said, "Not long the world below held me, for not a man's life, but a boy's I led. Had I lived longer, much that now we know as evil never would have been. My joy hides me from you, and this is how. Its rays cocooning me keep me unseen, a worm in its own silk. How you loved me had cause, for if I'd had more time to dwell down there, you would have had much more to see of my love than the leaves. I, Charles Martel, would have been there to offer you the fruits. All of Provence I would have held as lord, and everything of Naples to its roots down to Ausonia had been my ward, and Hungary was set to be a crown on my brow, shining as the Danube flows when it leaves Germany. And then look down, beyond the end of where your own land goes, to Sicily, which also had been mine, even that coast where the Sirocco blows in from the sea to scour the gulf's curved line, and Etna's sulphur, not Typhon beneath, darkens the land which would have found its kings through me, to wear the future's royal wreath, passed down from the conjoining line that springs from Rudolf and my father. But bad rule, by Charles the First, made such a botch of things. The French were slain because one man was cruel, one of their own, and so Palermo cried, 'Death, death to them!' And if they could not say the shibboleth, then on the spot they died. And finally the rest were sent away. And if my brother Robert learned from this, he'd shun already the catchpenny greed of Catalans and put due emphasis on how the nobles from that country need more stipends all the time. He would make sure, or someone should, there is no further load put on his ship, for it can take no more." His forebears were large-hearted, but the road of royal charity runs out in him. He's mean, and should have chevaliers to serve his cause, whose first concern is not to skim his income as if that's what they deserve. and I. Because, my lord, you see as well as I do the deep joy your words have filled me with, because you have a way to tell through that source by which all good is instilled into existence without end, so I am all the more glad, and I hold it dear, that you see this in seeing God on high. You've made me happy, and you've made things clear, because by speaking you've raised in my mind the question how we come to get sweet seed from bitter fruit. And he spoke in this kind. The human character does not just breed. God gives it to us, working through the stars. I'll show you how this is a truth you need before your eyes. Your attitude debars real knowledge, and your back hides what is meant. The good that spins the kingdom of the skies you climb, and makes the whole of it content, determines in the world that lives and dies all that occurs, and works its will through these celestial bodies. All is foreseen in the divine mind. The varieties of nature, yes, but also what they'll mean disposed across the universal frame, thus forming the well-being of the whole. For anything the bow shoots, it's the same. It falls contributing to that one goal of providence, an arrow to the mark. If that were not so, this sky where you walk would generate confusion and go dark, make ruins and not art. Our senses balk at such a prospect, for it would entail faults in the mind that move the starry wheels. The first intelligence would have to fail in giving out the guarantees and seals of all perfections. Do you need this theme expounded further? And I, not at all. I see how nature, to complete its scheme, can fail in nothing. It's impossible. Whence he continued, think on this, then. Would a man be worse off if on earth he were no citizen? And I, that's understood. No proof is needed. He, can that occur, citizenship, unless in different ways men live below and do the things they do? All this your Aristotle well portrays. He argued thus, and then continued, you must know, therefore, your actions all diverge at root. For one man, Solon, legislates, while Xerxes fights, having a different urge. Melchizedek's a craftsman. He creates in one way, but then Daedalus invents the means to fly, and so his son is lost. And circling nature, in the broader sense, employs one art. The mortal wax embossed with her seal has no house that stands apart from all the other houses. So it was that Esau was not Jacob, and the heart of Romulus was no less great because he was a peasant's son. Indeed, Rome thought Mars was his father. All that are begot, if providence did not act as it ought, would echo their begetters like as not. As the divine decides, so men are wrought to be themselves. Now what was held concealed behind your back you see before you. But just so my joy in you can stand revealed, take this corollary and wrap it shut about you. One more cloak around your gown. Always. Should nature meet with fortune ill adapted to it, then, like seed flung down away from its soil, it can't fulfill its usual expectations of success. And if the world below could only set its mind on fundamental naturalness, what men were meant to give you, you would get. But you switch someone, cut out to profess the art of wielding the long warlike sword towards religion. And you make a king from someone whose proclivities accord with preaching sermons, and that way you bring yourself to lose track and lose everything. Canto 9. After your husband Charles enlightened me in this way, fair Clemence, he then went on to outline all the kinds of treachery he knew his seed would meet when he was gone. And then he said, but silence. Let the years revolve. So there is nothing I can say except that from your wrongs deserved sad tears must follow. But the soul had turned away already, lamp inside that holy light, towards the sun that fills it, to the good sufficient to all things. Ah, souls of night, creatures beguiled and void of reverence, would you turn away your hearts from such a source of virtue and seek vanity instead? You would, alas. But now on the same course towards me, And again such light was shed, the form was cloaked. Another spirit moved in brightness, and by brightening yet more in silence, its desire to please was proved. And Beatrice, too, by resting as before her eyes on me, without a word expressed assent to my desire. Then I, "Pray bring, blessed spirit, means to set my mind at rest with all speed. I need proof of just one thing, that when I think, I have no need to speak, since you're a mirror that reflects my thought." The light, in whose depths I could only seek vainly to know who shed it as I sought, continued from the depths whence it had sung. "In Italy, depraved land, where the hills climb behind Venice up to meet, among the crags, the Brenta's first pool, where it spills out of the spring, and the Piave flows to make its mark, there is a slope whence came the firebrand Ezzelino. The world knows he laid the district waste. That was his fame. And I, Cunizza, was his sister. Here I shine, because this star's light ruled my life, and met Sordello singing in my ear when I already was Riccardo's wife. He ruled Verona, but the troubadour took me away, and after him I fled with Bonio, and there were several more I loved, and then a couple more I wed. But I forgive the cause of my warm ways. This might seem strange to you and to your crowd, because it led me up into this blaze of love perfected. For the brilliant, proud, and precious jewel beside me, fame remained, and will remain, from now, for 5 more turns of century like this one. It's ordained thereby that man, from this example, learns how striving in the first life to do well can bring a second life the first one earns. But nobody observes that principle among the ragtag bunch that teems between the Tagliamento and the Adige. Though punished often, they are never seen to get the point. Yet there will come a day, and soon, when Paduans, because they balk at duty to the emperor, will sprawl, spreading their blood where men wade as they walk in the marshland of Vicenza, and the tall, proud head of that Rizzardo who commands Treviso doesn't know the web is spun already that will snare him. At the hands of Feltre's bishop, evil will be done. That godless one will give up those who take refuge with him, and so they will be slain. And Feltre will weep long for that man's sake, so faithless no one's ever known the pain of being locked up in the citadel of Padua, who more deserved that fate, not even in its tower, that slice of hell they nickname Malta, for the stony weight that comes down on its dungeon, a cold roof to match the muddy floor. For great indeed would be the vat to hold the liquid proof of how those Ferrarese in their need were sold out, and whoever gets the task of weighing out that spilled blood cup by cup will soon grow tired and lean against the cask he pours it into. But the priest goes up into the Guelph party's eyes for this one gift, so courteously given as befits the custom of his country. Here we lift our thoughts aloft to where God's judgment sits, there where the mirrors shine that you call thrones, and from them shines on me the right to think and say such things. And then her singing tones fell silent, as she turned to form a link of that ring where she was before, or so I guessed. The other radiant happiness, already known to me for its rich glow, became more precious yet, became priceless, a perfect ruby struck with the sun's fire. For up there, every joy becomes more bright like laughter here, but here, when thoughts retire in sadness, shadows spread through the delight and it goes dark. I said, "God sees it all, and how you see is in him. So no wish can hide from you. How then does it befall that your voice is an insufficient dish to satisfy my hungers, though it shares with singing six-winged seraphim the role of pleasing heaven? Without splitting hairs, if I dwelt in the center of your soul, as you in mine, you would not need to state a question." He. The giant valley where the sea that girds the world spills through the gate, and spreads east through its misbehaving pair of shorelines so far that the day comes late from east to west, the sea against the sun until Jerusalem's meridian and Spain's horizon could be drawn as one right angle. There I lived my earthly span, in the area marked out on the north strand between the Ebro and the Magra, just across the water from the rocky land where Bugia lies. So each day the sun must, in Africa and where I live, both rise and fall at roughly the same time. And my Marseille, when Caesar took it as a prize, once made the harbor thick with blood. And by people who knew my name there, I was called Folco. This heaven here is stamped with love as it stamped me. Dido was never galled by passion. When it led her on to steal Aeneas from his wife and to betray her husband, more than I was when my youth had all its hair, nor she of Rhodope, the Thracian princess, when she heard the truth about her straying man, nor Hercules, who died for love of Iole. Here, though, we don't repent, but rather, unlike these, we smile. Not for the fault that plagued us so, back there, but now does not come back to mind. We smile to thank that force which in advance both ordered and foresaw. For here we find the object of our thoughts is in this dance of art, this beauty, this sublime result. We see the good by which the world above wheels round the one below, and we exult. But so you may, out of this sphere of love, take satisfaction for the wishes born when you came in. Let me speak more on this. You'd like a name to fit this burst of dawn beside me, sparkling as the sunbeams kiss the water. In this light, Rahab finds peace, who gave Christ's envoys, though she was a whore, their lodging, so the lights of love increase attain here. As her just reward, far more intensity than she once knew, and now she is with us, and of the highest grade our order grants. All other ranks must bow to honor her, once last, but now the first, since grateful Christ in triumph wished for it. She sits up here in state where the dispersed last shadow of the earth ends. It was fit, indeed. Some heaven should receive her as a victory trophy for those sweet palms split with nails, because she favored, this cause has no great place in the Pope's thought, Joshua and his first glory, Christ's great sacrifice there in the Holy Land. But Lucifer planted your city, he whose whole device was to betray his Maker, and from whom hot tears of envy come. Your Florence grows and spreads the florin, the gold flower whose doom is to mislead the sheep and lambs, for those follow the shepherds, who have all the jaws of raging wolves. For this the Gospels sink into neglect, and all the holy laws of the great teachers. Students taught to think mere canon law important, scrawl their script in margins. Popes do this, and cardinals, by self-esteem and scribbling fever gripped. Their thoughts go not to Nazareth. Gabriel's wings were once spread there, but the Vatican, where Peter died, and all those sacred parts of Rome where martyrs serve that holy man with soldiers' deaths, will from those cheating arts of profanation be set free, and at an early date. You may be sure of that. Canto 10. As God looked on his Son, the Word, with all the power of love that both of them exhale, he, three in one, first and ineffable, created everything, fit without fail, that turns in space and in the mind, and so no one who looks upon it can but taste his presence in whatever we can know. Therefore look up to where the wheels are placed aloft, reader. Lift up your eyes with mine, and aim at that point where the sun and moon and planets cross the equatorial line there in the stars. Thus you'll enjoy the boon of taking pleasure in your master's art, whose eyes are fixed upon it endlessly. So much He loves that movement in the heart of one wheel through another, while we see the day turn one way and the way the year turns in the other. See the branching out obliquely of the circle where appear planets that answer as they move about the wishes of the world. And if their track were not askew, much virtue would be vain in heaven. For just let the zodiac be more or less divergent from the plane it turns in, that which governs its straight course. And as the virtue there, so we would lose potential here, a falling off of force in the order of the world, both low and high. Stay at your bench now, reader, and think through the first taste that I've given you to try. You'll tire before it stops delighting you. The dish set down, now you must eat alone, for I've been made scribe of a theme that bends towards its telling all the care I own. Measuring everything that starts and ends with light, and stamping on the world the worth of heaven, nature's great minister, the sun, conjoined with where spring has its birth, as I have noted, wheeled through dawns that were early each time, the spiral of its drift towards the summer and its lengthened stay, and I was there but didn't see the shift of its position more than when we say we have a new thought just before the thought appears in our minds. Beatrice is the one who leads this instantaneous transport from good to better, so the thing is done in no time. How they must have burned so bright just in themselves, the ones inside the sun, distinguished not by color but by light. If I had practice, genius, and skill to conjure in the measure of that sight, my telling would be insufficient still to give the picture through the power of speech. We must believe and long for it, and should our poor imaginations fail to reach such heights, it is no shame, as if they could. For no light like the sun was ever seen by human eye. Thus they were shining there, the fourth family, of all those who had been set on their course by this realm of his care, the Father on the heights, who satisfies the theologians and the learned ones, by showing them the way he breathes and ties three kinds of breath together, his, the Son's, and Holy Ghost's. Then Beatrice, praise and prize the sun that lights the angels, our great Lord, who by his grace has raised you up to see his radiance. No heart had ever soared to give itself to God as speedily as mine at these words, with its whole consent and all its love so fixed on him that she who spoke was blotted out. She was content to be forgotten, and indeed she smiled. Smiled with such splendor that her glance dissolved my mind's absorption, so the thoughts compiled within it all became far less involved, dividing into many subjects. I saw many brilliant flashing lights converge on us, the point they were attracted by. They formed a crown, from which we heard emerge voices yet sweeter than their aspect shone. Sometimes we see the moon, Diana, shine, yet brighter for the girdle she has on. That soft and shimmering halo is the sign, the air is charged with water. In the court of heaven I've returned from, many jewels are found, more beautiful than can be thought, and past all price, and by the kingdom's rules there they must stay. This song was one of those, the song of lights. He that does not take wing to fly up there, it is as if he chose to hear news from the dumb. The angels sing to souls whose virtues lift them to the heights. So singing thus, three times these burning suns had swept around us, as on starry nights, stars near the poles move faster, but the ones to me seemed ladies, still held by the dance, who pause in silence, listening till they sense the new strain, which will take them from their trance. And so in one of them I heard commence this speech. The beam of grace that lights true love, and grows by loving, shine so multiplied in you, that it has brought you here above by that stair which nobody took a stride back down except to mount again. One who refused from his jug wine to quench your thirst would know the obstacles the rivers do, restricted by the rocks they'd like to burst and so resume their unimpeded flow towards the sea. You ask, what flowers bloom here in this garland, whose love glances glow around the lady by the powers of whom you gain your strength for heaven? You should know that I am Thomas of Aquinas. He, here on my right, is Albert of Cologne, my master. We were both lambs glad to be of that flock where, if none strays on its own, it eats well of the true food for the soul. We were Dominicans. If, for the rest, you'd have such facts, then follow round the whole wreath with your eyes as I say how it's blessed with famous names. Next comes the blazing smile of Gratian, he who well served both courts. He worked for truth and went the extra mile for justice, so for virtue of two sorts he is in paradise. Next in our choir, Peter of Lombardy, who gave the church all that he had. No tribute can rank higher than that. His four great books, where we may search successfully for truth and dogma, give a new equivalent for those two coins the widow gave God, and like them they live, for everything's the widow's mite that joins all we possess to heaven. Then there comes the fifth light, the most lovely in the wreath, a breath of such love that it still benumbs the senses of those in the world beneath who starve for news of it. It's Solomon. Given such wisdom in his lofty mind, the learned disposition still goes on, that he might have been saved, for of that kind division there's been nothing since his rule. And Dionysius is next in line, a candle now that burns in this bright school. But down there in the flesh, when day was dim, he still saw into what the angels are and how they minister. And then within that next small light smiles he who was by far the advocate that best explained how sin grew less in Christian times, Orosius, whose treatise was such help to Augustine. And if your mind's eye scans those I discuss from left to right as you hear what I mean, you seek the eighth already. There he is, Boethius. He rose from martyrdom and exile to this peace. Who knows of his vision of goodness knows this light comes from a body left below the golden roof, for so the church in Pavia is now called, where he was put to rest after the proof of how the world deceives, which saw him walled into the prison where he wrote his book on how philosophy consoles. And then, beyond a little further, if you look, you'll see three more flames that were once three men. There's Bishop Isidore, he of Seville, and the encyclopedia. And there is Bede of England, and all the sermons and the skill in doctrine. And then comes the prior we read for mysticism, Richard, who was born in Scotland, but in Paris lived to prove that contemplation leaves mere man forlorn, for it is more than man. And then you move your eyes to me from that light there, which holds Brabant Saigre, so coiled and crushed in thought he thought that death, to free him from thought's folds, came slowly, but in Italy was taught through treachery that it can come too soon. And all he talked of in the street of straw in Paris, about how the opportune had no role in creation, for the law determined all. That doctrine played its part in forming the high truth which turns dispute into a driving force. Then, with the art by which a clock, both early and astute, tells us the church, the bride of Christ, will sing matins to its dear bridegroom, that he may adore her. And one tiny part will bring another closer, so the interplay triggers the actuation of a spring, striking a chime to herald the new day, so sweetly the well-ordered spirit swells with love. Just so I saw the glorious wheel rotate, and voice to voice, like peals of bells, give out the harmony no one can feel except there, where eternal joy is real. Canto 11. Thick-witted mortal cares, how false and vain your earthbound reasoning that keeps your wings beating in downward flight. One hoped to gain letters in law, one strove to do great things in medicine, one followed the priesthood, one set himself to rule by craft or force, one studied robbery, one found the good in state affairs, one signed on for a course in carnal knowledge, though he understood he would need weary years to graduate, and one did absolutely nothing. I, set free of all these lures, was in a state of grace with Beatrice high in the sky, received in glory. When each light returned to where it was before, at the same place, as if upon its stand a candle burned, it stopped. Within its radiance, the face which had already spoken spoke once more, smiling and brighter yet. As I reflect its beams, so in the light eternal, I see your thoughts and their cause. They intersect with my gaze. You have doubts, and want my words made plain and clear, so you can understand on your own level, touching on the herds of sheep well fed, and on the other hand, my reference to no second Solomon. Here, in both cases, we must make distinct the meaning of each word we dwell upon. Expression and significance are linked. The providence divine that rules the course of all the human world with its decrees strikes blind with its unfathomable force all eyesight and creation, comes to please solely the understanding of that one who is the bride of him that cried aloud in agony for what the blind had done. With sacred blood he married her. Now, proud in her position and her faithfulness to him, she finds her sure way to his side. Her guides, two princes matched in their prowess. The one, Saint Francis, always sanctified by his seraphic ardor, kept the watch for faith. The other was Saint Dominic, who always screwed his knowledge up a notch, and so in splendor shook the heretic with his cherubic light. Two souls, one mind. I, the Dominican, shall speak in praise of Francis. Since the way those two combined means lauding either one will work both ways, commending each for working to one end. There, where Perugia feels the heat and cold, and where poor Gualdo and Nocera bend their heads beneath the yoke that they must hold with weary arms, for they receive less light, there falls a fertile mountain slope between two waters. One comes streaming from the height where once Ubaldo's guiding hand was seen. The other's the Toppino. From that hill, where at Assisi steepness most gives way to level ground, a sun, as this sun will rise sometime from the Ganges, broke like day. A dawn called Francis. Not I rose, but east would be a better name for that blessed place. Ascesi is a small word. At the least we should invoke, to suit a splendid case, the Orient ex alto. He had not yet risen far when first the earth began to feel strong from his mighty virtue. What marked out his course was how, still a young man, he crossed his father for a lady's sake, she to whom nobody unlocks the door of his free will but only by mistake, as he might do with death, and so before the bishop, and with his own father there, he married her. Her name was Poverty, and he gave her each day more loving care. Bereft of her first husband, Jesus, she could only wait, unknown even by name, more than 1,100 years despised without a suitor, loyal till he came. Not even Amyclas could make her prized when he stood up to Caesar in his fame, a fisherman who faced that fearful voice and only with her spirit. And the same when she had so much courtesy to show and courage as Christ mounted on the cross, while Mary, full of love, remained below. But lest my speech should leave you at a loss with metaphors, let's say, in all I've said, Francis and Poverty both loved as one. Their harmony and happy glances led to wonder among men, and sweet dreams spun in thought and holy pondering. And thus it was that venerable Bernard first ran barefoot, at a speed which still to us seems quick enough, though he thought he was cursed with slowness. And then barefoot, too, goes Giles, barefoot Sylvester, following the groom. They're so pleased with the bride. Onward for miles, that father, subject to a humble doom, it seemed, yet still a master, took the road, he and his lady and their family tied together with a single cord. His code for being just a merchant's son was pride, not cowardice. Nor was his brow weighed down for being subject to contempt and scorn, as if a circus act had come to town. Instead, as if to royal purple born, he showed his colors to Pope Innocent, and from that firm resolve came the first seal upon his order. And so on he went, the convoy of his brothers at his heel, increasing always, so their life was sung better by heaven's glory than my voice. The angels are a choir, and I one tongue. And so the shepherd who had made his choice for owning nothing wore a crown again. Honorius bestowed it, as envoy of the eternal spirit. And then, when thirsting for martyrdom, for him a joy, he'd preached of Christ and his devoted men in the palace of the Sultan, greatly proud, and found the Saracens had not begun to be ripe for conversion. He unbowed, but seeing that it could not serve the turn to stay, went back to where his homeland yields a surer harvest. There he came to Urn, high on a crag arising from the fields between the Tiber and the Arno, his last seal received from Christ. And all who know what Christ's wounds were will know what that seal is. And for 2 years his body was marked so, until the time came for his great reward, when God, who destined him for so much good, raised him at last to heights that would accord with how he'd kept as lowly as he could. And to his brothers, as his rightful heirs, he gave the keeping of his lady dear, and bade them love her and soothe all her cares, so she might never more have cause to fear that they might not be faithful. And then from her bosom his great soul chose to take wing on his returning flight to its kingdom, because bare earth, bereft of everything, was all the pomp of his bier. Ponder now, what kind of man was this man's fit ally to keep the bark of Peter's questing prow rightly directed when the seas were high? And such was Dominic, our patriarch. Meaning his followers, you may perceive, all carry merchandise of goodly mark if they obey him. But you must believe, his flock has grown so greedy for new food, positions, honors, dignities, and such distractions, that they are by themselves pursued to scatter in wild pastures, out of touch with their first shepherd, and the more footloose they wander from his guidance, the less milk they bring back to the fold. So they're no use. And those that stay close are the fearful ilk, who just seek safety, and get little stuff to suit their cowls. If now my words are not obscure, and you have listened long enough, so there is something you have not forgot, you will be satisfied in part and see the way the plant is wasted, and what's meant by that correction in the homily. Where we eat well, was how the first words went, but if we do not stray, spells discontent. Canto 12. The moment the best flame said its last word, the holy millstone once again began to turn, and from where that last word was heard the ring of light, according to its plan of circularity, was turning yet, its course unfinished, when another one just like it formed around it, so they met each other's match in how the thing was done. All movements mirrored, each song echoed song, songs which our muses and our sirens hear on earth, though they should play however long on their sweet pipes, could never quite come near with their reflection of a splendor. When two rainbows, colorful and parallel, curve through thin cloud, the inner one again born into the outer, Juno bends to tell her handmaid Iris what to do. The voice of Echo lives again, the nymph whom love for her Narcissus left without a choice except to fade, as the bright sun above devours all vapors. People here presage the world, because of God and Noah's pact, will not be flooded in a later age, as once it was, and so we saw, in fact, those two wreaths of eternal roses turn around us, and the way the one within induced the outer one to sing and burn at its command. Then all the joyous din of that great dancing festival, its flame and song, its play of light with light, its grace, stopped altogether at the same moment with one accord. Our human sight works just that way. Whenever both our eyes, moved by one impulse, must together close and open. But then one new light gave rise to such a voice that as the needle shows the pathway to the star, I turned to it. The love, it said, that makes us beautiful, draws me to hail another master, fit to praise, since in his name we have heard all the good things said about my leader. Let great Dominic be lauded now, just as Francis has been, for both, let's not forget, fought for one end. Each son of glory has a right to shine, in one great blaze well met. Christ's army, the church militant, which cost so dear to rearm, slowly moved, and few and full of doubt, and looking next lost behind their standard. Then the emperor, who forever reigns on high, provided for his soldiers in their peril, not from their deserving of his helping hand, but more from the unbounded mercy of his care. And as we said, two heroes he assigned his bride, and they inspired, by word and deed, his scattered troops. And where we look to find sweet Zephyr rising to breathe on the seed and spread new leaves in Europe, by which she sees herself clothed again there in the west, not far inland from where the waves can be heard beating, behind which the sun will rest in summer from his long trajectory and hide from men, lies favored in Castile, the town of Calaruega, by the shield protected where we see one lion kneel as subject, and the other rule the field. And there the Christian faith's most faithful man, the holy athlete, gracious to his own and cruel to foes, was born. His mind began, as soon as formed, to show how, all alone, it had such power that in his mother's womb it made a prophet of her. So she dreamed about a dog let loose in a dark room, and in its mouth a hot torch that redeemed. And when the sacred nuptials between him and the faith before the holy font were signed and sealed, and each of them had been dowered by the other with all both could want of being saved, his godmother, who gave assent for him, saw glowing in her sleep a star set in his brow, which was the brave symbol of what would spring from him, and keep on springing from his heirs a marvelous fruit. And that his name might signal what he was, a spirit put the Lord's name at the root of his name, Dominic, spelt thus because the form possessive showed he was possessed completely by his God. Of him I speak as of the laborer Christ thought the best to help him in that garden where we seek eternity on earth, our holy church. Herald he seemed indeed, and of the house of Christ himself, for if today we search among his actions, all of them espouse Christ's love, even the first, which has the ring of Christ's first counsel, which was, "First seek ye God's kingdom." And there was another thing. Often the nuns would find him silently awake, stretched on the ground, as if to say, "For this end am I come." Happy indeed his father, with a name fit to display, Felice, satisfaction, as we read the grace of God set in his mother's name, Giovanna. Medicine and common law, from which bright students take now their world fame, had no appeal. He loved true manna more. Becoming in so short a time so great a teacher, that he tamed the vineyard, which soon withers if its keeper should be late, or lazy with his care, or would grow rich in the wrong way into the papal seat, not in itself, but in its occupant, less kind now to the just poor, yet replete in favor to itself, blind to its scant distant from decadence. He made appeal, not for the right to skim funds for good works, not for the first free post, not for a deal to milk the tithes, not for the cozy perks, but for the chance to fight the erring world for faith, the seed from which they grew, these 24 plants, each a flame unfurled, the singing fires that here encircle you. Then, like a torrent from a high spring hurled, with doctrine, zeal, and apostolic force, he went forth, and with mighty strength he fell upon those thorn bushes, which were the source of heresy, and pummeled them pell-mell, most vigorously where they best fought back. From him there sprang the energizing streams, by which the thirsty saplings, when they lack sufficient water, flourish as it teems in the Catholic garden. If such was one wheel of Holy Church's fighting chariot, with which she saved herself and brought to heal her enemies. Then surely you are not in doubt about the other excellence that Thomas spoke of before I appeared, and spoke so courteously. In one sense, however, its top rim is cracked and peeled, or put it this way. Mold has lined the cask there where a good wine ought to leave a crust. The wine went bad. His family at their task had started on the one path they could trust, formed by his footprints, but they turned about, the one in front thrown on the one behind. The lax were lauded, and the strict cast out, and soon there'll be a harvest of the kind where tares denied the barn start to complain. Whoever searched our rule-book page by page might still find on one leaf after some strain, "I'm what I once was, even in this age." But he would be from neither of the schools that vie to dominate the order now. The one that petrifies its hallowed rules of poverty, the one that tells how they count no more. I was the living soul of that man born in Bagnoregio, to lead the order and to keep it whole by always rating worldly matters low. Bonaventura was my name. And these? Illuminato, early follower of Francis, and among the first to please God with their barefoot poverty. They were the vanguard of the court. Here's Augustine, another of them. Then the mystic Hugh, who at St. Victor wrote the books that mean so much now, as, you must know, also do the writings of the bookworm Peter. Next, Peter the Spaniard, logic's champion, who codified it in 12 sheaves of text that shine below for you to dwell upon. The prophet Nathan foretold David's sin with someone else's wife, and Chrysostom fought greed and helped the great church to begin. And then Anselm, in all of Christendom, the greatest theologian of his time. And then Donatus, who once set his hand to grammar, the first art, so we might climb from verbal chaos and thus understand expressive form, one of the special fields of the Franciscan order. He who wrote so much of the great library that yields our knowledge about everything of note in exegesis is Rabanus. See him there. And then the abbot Joachim, born in Calabria, shines close to him. In life I quarreled bitterly with him. The world envisioned in his prophecy granted the spiritual significance beyond its bounds. But here we're reconciled, in how the bright connecting circles dance of love and knowledge. How St. Thomas smiles on you with all his courtesy, and fine judgment of glowing language is what draws this celebration from both me and mine of such a mighty soldier for the cause, which is ours too. So this was all applause. Canto 13.